So I think at this point we should drop the spoiler gate, because we are going to talk about Infinity War. When you listen to this, it only would have been released like less than a week prior to that.
Yeah, and the movie's really punchy, so really talking about anything in any bit of detail, it isn't just so vague. It's just two dudes talking about emotions, but in the most convoluted way in the world. It makes you feel!
Yeah, so if you want to see this movie spoiler-free, thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoy the movie when you do eventually see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, John.
Yes.
What did you think of Infinity War?
It's good. I liked it.
I liked it too. One of the big things that I read a lot about this movie, though, is that people had these huge reactions in the cinema when big moments happened. There were audible gasps. In my cinema, that didn't happen. But as soon as the credits popped up, whole cinema burst into conversation.
So, in my cinema, people did make noises and gasp, but mostly laugh at jokes.
Yeah.
It was pretty much the whole...
There was laughter.
Yeah. There were people clapping when sometimes when jokes were made or quips were made.
I had a more reserved sort of theater-esque audience, I think.
Actually, we talked about The Last Jedi, and I had a very similar reaction in the audience then as I did now.
Okay, sure.
There was a lot of engagement that the audience had, especially when I look at other movies I've seen. It's not normal for me to hear that much noise. So I did notice it, to be honest, but I don't know. I don't think it left me with a grand sense of wonder or anything like that.
Because the last ones that came out were Black Panther, Thor Ragnarok,
and
both of those, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Mm-hmm. So those three are by far the best Marvel movies. They are way up in that tier one where they're talking about so much more than just which comic book character will punch the other one. The worst Marvel movies are about some dude punching some other dude because the bad dude wants to blow something up because of a MacGuffin and destiny or something.
And those movies moved past personal taste as well because they were talking about deeper issues.
Yeah.
I really like Ant-Man, but that is not really talking about how corporations abuse technology that much, right? It's really just talking about a man who becomes an ant and has an ant army.
Yeah, and the reason people like that is because it's light and cute and funny and Evangeline Lilly is pretty great and we should put her in more movies.
Definitely. God, Marvel, balance your cast. I was talking about this with someone. Balance your cast.
Yeah, they are now, after 10 years, finally going to have a female-led superhero film.
It's beyond a joke.
Yeah.
And also, the cast of movies themselves. I just all over balance that shit.
So what we're really getting at here, and we already dropped the spoiler gate, in this movie, motherfuckers die. Right?
Shit, really?
Yeah.
In the Infinity War movie?
Some people fucking die.
People fucking die.
And a lot of people reacted to that pretty strongly. Near the start of the movie, Loki is killed and Heimdall are both killed.
Yeah, that was rough.
Further on, Gamora dies. And so these deaths are like, Thanos kills someone and it's graphic and immediate and you're like, damn, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, when Loki died, there was a pop when that neck broke.
Yeah, did you see his eyes when he was getting strangled?
Like, it was gross.
They very immediately established Thanos as a very, very bad person because everybody loves Loki.
Yeah.
Everybody he's is in love with Loki.
He's the villain that we love to hate to love.
So those characters die in moments where one character kills another. Right at the end of the movie, though, and this is obviously, we're so far beyond spoilers, Thanos gets his Infinity Gauntlet and does his thing where his whole plan is to kill half the people on every planet in the galaxy or the universe because overpopulation is a problem.
Yeah, he's going to randomly kill half the population of the entire universe.
Yeah, because advanced life is going to consume everything. That's his motivation.
Yep.
And he does it. And so 50% of the cast turns to dust and everybody in the cinema, like you could feel it, even though nobody was audibly, was like, oh my God, oh my God. And for me, I'm just sitting there like, but now I know none of that counts. I'm just sitting here like, Black Panther died. There's definitely going to be a Black Panther 2.
Yeah.
When Falcon and Scarlet Witch died, I was kind of like, oh man, maybe they're committing to this. But when fucking Spider-Man turns to Ash, Spider-Man's coming back.
They're not going to get rid of the Spider-Man.
Yeah, like, they're not going to get rid of Black Panther. They're not going to get rid of fucking 80% of the Guardians.
So
I'm just sitting there like, but that clearly doesn't count.
When I don't know how other people think or feel because I don't understand them. I have fully embraced the idea of these being comic book movies.
Yeah.
Because of the way they do crossovers and the way they tell their stories. And so they're going to have all the comic book tropes. And I trust the Marvel movies to do them really well. And when they do their Flashpoint or whatever and everyone comes back to life, I'll be interested to see what happens. And they are going to do movies post everyone being dead.
Yeah.
And they will bring people back. But guess what? That's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And I think the scene that they had allows you to take on the seriousness of everyone going away, but does give you that kind of comfort that someone will come back.
And I think that this is, in the movie's credit, a moment only has to be good in the moment for it to be worthwhile. I'm trying to think of an example, but there are plenty of movies where something will happen, and when you're in the car going home or whatever, you'll suddenly think, oh, they could have done this instead. But it doesn't matter. Like, Looper is the one that I'm thinking of. In Looper, there's that bit, that chilling fucking bit, where they've got the dude in the past, and they're performing destructive surgery on him. They're amputating fingers and limbs and stuff, and as he's driving, parts of him are disappearing.
Yeah.
If you apply any kind of logic to that, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But there's this desperation in the moment that sells it, and so you're not thinking about that until after.
And then you're only really bothered if you're just wanting to hate it.
Yeah, if you're wanting to pull it apart. For me, in this moment where I'm watching half the cast disappear, I'm sitting there thinking, clearly none of this counts, they're all going to come back. I'm not invested in that. Clearly everybody else in the cinema was. And even by the after credits scene where you see Nick Fury and Maria Hill get evaporated, where he's summoning Captain Marvel, they're all like, oh, this is a great big moment, because by that point, even the after credits scene knows that you've probably figured out that this isn't permanent.
Yeah.
You know, like to the point where, oh yeah, these two major beloved characters turning to dust is barely acknowledged in the scene at all. It's all about excitement for the next movie.
I disagree, because I think the film successfully balances it so that you can have both if you're willing to be there with it. You can accept that these characters are disappearing, and admittedly it is only temporary, but they're still evaporating into dust. Spider-Man still looked so upset.
Yeah, they made you feel that one.
Right? They still did the work there. But and if people do...
I disagree, though. I think they did the work with Spider-Man, and you felt Spider-Man, but everybody else, like Scarlet Witch, was just like, eh, whatever. To me, it felt very transient. And
so I think this comes down to the way they've just portrayed it, because I feel like we watched exactly the same thing, we think very similarly, and I fundamentally disagree. And I would say that I was moved by them being erased from bloody history in like the most merciful / terrifying way possible.
The dispassionate way possible.
I didn't realize that they would be conscious as they disappeared from the universe, Thanos. That's a bit fucked, Thanos. Yeah,
but I also think they sold really well that it was ultimately peaceful. Like, people were scared, but they clearly weren't in pain.
So this is the thing, right? I feel like they put a lot of work into this scene, and that's why it feels like it's a pinhead, right? You're either on board or you're not on board with it. There's no, like, I could see what they were doing. You are passioned by how you didn't feel the thing everyone feels.
I also want to reiterate that I was in a cinema, and the whole movie, I was, as I was saying, a little bit detached from it. I was seeing a lot of the tropes and not really deeply engaged. I think if I'd seen this movie for the first time in my home, in a dark room, on my terms, I probably would have been like, fuck, well done.
Yeah, yeah.
Well done, Marvel.
Maybe cinemas are just done for you.
Yeah, I think that they are. And the only reason I saw this is because Twitter was alight with what people think aren't spoilers because they think I'm as stupid as they are, but are definitely obviously spoilers. Like when Movie Bob tweeted something like, hey, if you're thinking about the reactions to how that movie ended, just bear in mind that some stuff can be undone. I'm like, well, a bunch of people are going to fucking die. I know what that means. Yeah. You're a film critic.
Yeah. I say all this. We are literally recording a podcast to be listened by people. So I am shouting to the internet.
Yeah. But a podcast is not something you listen to accidentally.
Yeah. Yeah. You, the listener, have decided to listen to us talk about Infinity War if you have or haven't seen it, and you're on board with our rambling and waffling. And for that, we love you. But I just feel like Twitter, especially to me, Twitter is like shouting to the public. It's like,
it is a website full of soapboxes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in the negative sense, but
that's what it is.
It is a public engagement forum.
That's totally fine. That's why we have the Fountain Square, you know, for the Herald to stand and hee.
With their big old bell or whatever.
But if he was starting to do Infinity War spoilers, I would dick him.
Hear ye. Remember that yon Infinity Gauntlet has the power to revert us time. And the Visioned Man may not yet be dispatched.
Yeah. And then I would just be beating this man dressed in Renaissance clothes. And then they kick me out of the fair and I'm not allowed to go back to California. Oh, whatever.
One of the other things I'll say that was a little bit noteworthy for me. I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm not going to be all like, oh, I'm Cinema Sins and they did this trope too many times and I noticed it. Bad movie. So there are six Infinity Stones.
Yes.
Thanos starts off with one.
Yes.
For the other five,
four
of them are people deciding to let him get away with it because they're afraid of the emotional consequences of letting him get away with
it. Now, see, I heard this, and I didn't actually feel that that was the problem. It might be the case, though, if we go through them all. But I was ready to be like, oh, this is a bit ridiculous. But then in watching it, I didn't feel that. Come up.
It's not as bad as me stating it that way makes it sound. But you have Doctor Strange, Star-Lord and Gamora, Loki, and who's the one I'm forgetting? So Loki gives him the Tesseract.
Yeah, that's because he's trying to save his brother.
So and he's all does. Like, I'm gonna give you this to save my brother. So that's point number one.
Is that bad?
Well, it's not that it's bad, it's just that it happens four or five times. So, I can believe Loki would do that because Loki is selfish.
We're going to go real terrible. We're going to break these down now because I'm really intrigued in breaking them down.
Okay.
So the first one is Loki literally hands Thanos the stone because he wants to save his brother's life.
Yeah. So the second one that comes up is Star-Lord not killing Gamora like he promised and letting...
When?
In the reality bendy thing.
He does kill Gamora.
But he takes forever to do it. And if he had have tried to surprise him with it, then I think he would have done it.
I disagree. I think that Thanos, it would never have.
It might have failed.
And the reason why it would have failed is because Thanos loves Gamora, as we later find out. And I think he has total control of that situation.
I also don't think that Thanos would have expected Star-Lord to do that.
He didn't. That's why he's like, I like you. Right?
And he's all like, okay, now she wants you to do it. Do it. She wants you to do it. And if he had been surprised, because in later scenes we find out he can be surprised, and it had just been bang and Gamora's dead, no Soul Stone. At the very least, not straight away.
I feel like that scene was an ambush from the start. So we're there.
Whether or not it's effective isn't really the point.
Yeah.
The point is that Star-Lord didn't keep a promise that he made to Gamora for the sake of the galaxy over.
He kind of did. He tried to kill her. It's not his fault that he couldn't follow through with it. I mean, let's not blame everyone who can't actually follow through.
He eventually kept a promise. And again, I'm not saying that the character moment wasn't motivated.
Yeah.
So we've had this point twice.
Cool.
What's the gem he gets next?
Is that the one where he goes to the planet?
Oh, the next one is when Nebula's getting tortured and Gamora gives up the stone.
Planet, that's where she
gives
dies.
Up the stone. So that's the one I was forgetting. So then we've got another point, and this is Gamora, who previously had said to Star-Lord, kill me because we can't let him have the stones. It's going to be the worst thing ever. And again, I want to make it clear, in each of these moments, it's not that I don't buy that the character would do it, but when you have four or five of them back to back, eventually you're like, can at least one of you commit? And then Wanda does. Wanda finally fucking does commit, and I'm just like, you are the best one. You are the most heroic of all these people. Because I know that it sucks. I know it sounds like, yeah, that's why I play Renegade in Mass Effect. But at some point, you have to accept how much you care about this person matters less than half the universe, and also there's a 50% chance that this person's probably going to die anyway as part of that.
I might have shouted out with joy when Star-Lord tried to shoot Gamora because I was so excited that he would do that because I was like, yes, commit, like do something serious. But I felt, see, when I watched the series of events, even though they are one after the other, because of how they balance the characters in the scene and the motivations, they're not completely ridiculous.
And they're not.
The one that was the most to me is the one with bloody Vision. That one I thought was the most ridiculous. And it ends with her destroying the stone, even though it's ultimately futile. But that long carried out one was my biggest problem. And they used that one to sort of punchline her actually following through.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I was kind of really impressed by that.
So you've got the first one with Loki and Thor. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely buy that. Yeah. You've got the second one with Star-Lord and Gamora. And I'm like, okay, I buy it, but I would have bought it more if I hadn't just seen Loki do the same thing. And then you have Gamora and Nebula, and I'm like, I buy this, but I would have bought it more if I hadn't just seen it twice again in this movie. And then you have Doctor Strange, and I'm like, at some point, one of these people is cold enough
but
You and I are on the same page about this, though, right?
What?
That the one success future he saw involved him giving the stone to Thanos?
Obviously.
Yeah.
Why else would he just give a stone to Thanos?
Mm.
He's Doctor Strange. His entire job is protecting the universe.
I'll say this as well. I thought Benedict Cumberbatch did much better as Doctor Strange in this one than he did in Doctor Strange. I wouldn't say the performance was poor, but it wasn't written for him.
All of these movies are like sixes. You know what I mean? They're like...
I disagree. I think they're all like eights. And then you have like Thor the Dark World, which is a six.
No, I would call Thor the Dark World a four because I'm trying to ration... Like, I think we buy a seven too much. And so I move all my numbers down so we can use the rest of them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you have... 7, which is good, 8, which is excellent, 9 and 10 are just different flavors of mind-blowing, and you have 1 to 5 to talk about shitness.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, shit things are just shit. We don't need to talk about them for 5 whole numbers. 5 is the average. Anyway.
The point you're trying to make is that all of these movies are functional and serviceable and not ever really a waste of time to see. Yes.
And that they also should have more women in them. But yeah. Anyway, and that moment with Doctor Strange, I feel like they telegraphed that really well to me.
Yeah.
And so that's why... Even though it's one after the other after the other, that one especially was like, well, this is part of the plan now.
I understand as well that when you've got Star-Lord angry at Thanos, and Thanos has been beaten, and all they have to do is wait 30 seconds more to let him be beaten, and why he snapped and did what he did. Again, I get that that makes sense for the character, but I can't help but look at it and go, fuck.
That was just a bit too... Again, it's structurally fine, but I just feel like I'm tired of that.
I would have believed it a little bit more if it was Nebula rather than Star-Lord, you know?
Yeah. Something like that. Something.
Yeah.
I just felt like the packaging was so... I hate to say this, but it just seemed like obvious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's upset. His girlfriend that he tried to murder in another scene, you know, at her own wishes. It's like...
For me, punching a dude in the head has never been an instinct that I've had. You know what I mean? I've never been in a situation with someone and been like, I really wish I could punch this person in the face. Thankfully.
Yes. You and me differ. And I'm glad I'm a pacifist and don't do that.
But the obvious best way to hurt Thanos is to take the glove away from him. So if I was Star-Lord, I would have done what Star-Lord does because Star-Lord is a character. But if I was in Star-Lord's position... I would have gloated about how we've beaten him and maybe even gone really dark with it. And it's like, you killed her for nothing.
Yeah.
Because we're about to beat you and you're going to have to live with that forever. And I'm going to hate you for that forever.
And then maybe that could have woke him out of it. Saying something like that, like the idea of him killing his daughter was
something that
worthless.
Was less obviously going to fuck them up than punching him.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had built that scene, that's probably the idea I wish I would have come up with, but I would have come up with the punching him scene.
And it's like shooting him even. Because if he had a shot him, because you can at least think that if he shoots him, then he's going to die.
Yeah.
But punching him, what's that even going to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just going to make it harder for everyone else to do their job.
He's basically the Hulk. Malevolently evil.
It's also how it's sold, because in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, there's that bit where Ego tells Peter that he killed his mum, and he just pulls the guns out and shreds the guy.
Yeah.
And that was a really good moment, I thought. That was really earned, and it was surprising, but also fit so perfectly, and I was never puzzled by it. This one, it didn't really click as well for me.
Yeah, it's just, I think with these Marvel films, that's the amount of work has gone into them. That's not seamless, but it's never totally broken anymore. I think that's the really interesting part is how well they've gotten this done. I will say, though, my personal pet peeve with these movies is, I don't know, and I'm obviously a moron who knows nothing about constructing CGI in movies, or frankly constructing movies in general apart from the fundamentals, but my god, stop showing scenes where people are in Iron Man suits with their human head out,
because
it looks terrible.
It's bad
every single time they do it, when it's fucking Banner in the Hulk busting armor, whether it's War Machine. It just looks terrible, and it ruins those scenes for me.
And it blows in my Iron mind. Man 1 and 2, they had physical suits, so that when they popped the helmet open, they were in the suit.
And that's it. That's why they look so good in those moments. I was just at that last scene right there, where the whole crew who's left are standing there. My eyes are just drawn to the War Machine and the Hulk busting armor and how they pop out. They're not on that background, and they're not even in those suits. They're just heads in a green screen. And I can just see that vividly in my mind, and I can't detach myself from it. But hopefully I've not ruined it forever for you.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
No, I'm more worried about the listener.
Especially now that Stark is in the nano suit, that looks really CGI most of the time.
Yeah, it really does.
And if you're going to put him in the nanotech suit, this is the movie to do it. But every single time they do something else with the suit, where it's like, oh yeah, now it fits in a wristwatch. I'm just like, but now it's not It's just not the cool, big, clunky Iron Man suit where chunks of it can fly off.
Yeah,
because it can fit in a wristwatch.
It feels far less real.
Yeah, and so now he's wearing liquid.
Yeah, I should really ask some of the people I know who actually work in making CG what goes into it and finally get an explanation, because it seems so incongruous in a movie that has so much polish and so much money put into it. And I feel like, who saw that and was like, that was fine? Like, who wrote the check for that?
I don't so much think they thought it was fine. I think that it was like, okay, this is worth $6 million, but the 10% improvement is not worth another $6 million.
And I think they're wrong. But that's where I differ.
So we've pet peeved a fair bit now. Let's talk about the stuff that really worked. So for a movie that's almost 3 hours long and focuses on three or four different primary scenes of action, it is paced very, very well.
This movie felt like it was an hour and a half tops. Yeah. An hour long, even. It was so packed.
I was never bored with any specific scene. Because like when you watch like Game of Thrones or whatever, you'll get to like fucking the dudes at the wall or
whatever scene. You don't like
whatever character you find is the most boring, and it's like, oh fuck, this is gonna be an episode where I spend half an hour looking at these guys and I don't get to see whatever fucking Daenerys is doing, which is the thing I want to see,
which is the exact opposite of me.
But in this
I'm like, show me that wall every day, baby.
Everyone was interesting, everybody bounced off each other pretty well. There was some stuff where I don't think Star-Lord's writing was as good as it is in a pure Guardians film,
but definitely
Guardians films are like way up there. But Spidey, Iron Man and Doctor Strange were all great together. Thor and the Guardians, when they're together, were great. Cap and his crew all did really well. They didn't actually have that much to say, honestly. Yeah. They weren't really doing too much conversation and emotional introductions and all that kind of thing. Mark Ruffalo is an actor that... Do you ever see an actor that you kind of feel just slipped through the cracks? And somehow they got into a good movie and everybody just agreed that the actor was good.
Just because he was cheaper than Edward Norton.
Yeah, and like... He's been in some good movies like Spotlight, and I haven't seen Spotlight, so maybe he's amazingly good in that. But he's just in a whole bunch of movies, and I kind of look at him and go, you're not that good an actor. You do this one kind of affectation, and you just feel kind of awkward and out of place in every scene that you're in.
I feel like because they haven't had that whole movie to give him the chance to actually develop a character, every scene he's in is quickly develop my character. Like, especially in this movie,
find a voice for this person.
Yeah, there's like that conflict between him and the Hulk that's going on. I'm like, this should have happened somewhere else. Why is it happening here?
Can we talk about this as well, very briefly? How cool is it that they put shit in the trailer that isn't in the movie just to fuck with people?
They did? What?
There's a big scene in the trailer where Cap and Black Widow and Black Panther and that whole crew are charging forward through the trees with a bunch of dudes, and the Hulk is there. Yeah. And that scene doesn't take place because Black Panther and the Hulk never fight alongside each other.
You are so right.
And so they're deliberately putting shit in there to fuck with people who think they're smart enough to figure that out. I love that.
Yeah, that's...
Fuck you, YouTube.
Calm down. I mean, I do admittedly hate how trailers reveal a lot of the plot, and I kind of feel like they made a trailer for a movie that doesn't exist, but to advertise the movie that does exist...
Yeah, I think that's cool as all hell.
Yeah, and after having watched the trailer and watching this movie, I'm like, oh... That'd be interesting. I like the idea of them showing what the film might be like, and then the film...
They give you an emotional sense of what the movie is going to be like, but not any plot points that are in it.
Yeah, because sometimes a trailer is just the beats. If you watch the Martian trailers, you do not need to see the movie The Martian. It takes you through the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like a speed run of the book.
I saw a trailer for The Titan on Netflix, and that was just the whole movie.
Oh, no. But I think that's the problem with Mark Ruffalo, is he has to micro-grow his character in between.
Like, the best opportunity he's had to do it was in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, and even then, that's not the main thrust, you know?
Yeah, the Hulk gets more character development than Bruce Banner does. Yeah.
But overall, I had a really fun time. I thought the quips were really good. I thought the writing was mostly great. And it just flowed so well. The other thing, too, I don't know if it was the angle I was sitting at, because I did sit a bit too far off to center, the front and off center, because I accidentally booked tickets for today and not yesterday when we went to see it. Whoops.
Oopsie doodle.
Well, I still paid for the tickets, so everything's fine, morally. The fight scenes sometimes went a bit too fast for my eyes. And I was watching some of the fight scenes, and I couldn't follow the action properly, and it was starting to make me feel a little nauseous.
Okay.
And not all of them, did this, but when I watch a really good kung fu film, I feel like, especially like The Raid is a perfect example of this.
Yeah.
All the fights, no matter how fast they are or what happens, they are perfectly translatable to you, the audience.
Yeah. Fury Road is a really good example of that.
Another one as well. I just feel like some of those fight scenes went a little too fast, especially because they were all CG, that I'm just getting that blur. I was like working hard and like I had to hold on to watch.
So I did not feel the same, but then again, I was in the perfect seat in the cinema. I got the best one. I thought that most of the fight scenes were very readable, especially the Thanos fight with that team.
All the Thanos fights for me, anytime Thanos was involved, I was shocked by how like those scenes were set up. And
the messiest one I would say was probably the one right near the start between Iron Man and the axe wielding dude.
Yeah,
I think Iron Man and Spidey, and that was just a lot of movement that was very rotational. Yeah.
I think that might have been the scene that got me onto that. And then when those monster things, there's animals that try and force their way through the force field. Some of those micro fights when it would cut to different things were very fast, and at the angle I was at were very uncomfortable.
Yeah, so I didn't have a problem with that, but I can't recount anything that happened in them. It was just Cap punched a guy and War Machine shot a guy and then Thor hit a guy with something, and it was just a character did a punch, and that's all that was sort of readable from those. Whereas the fight with Thanos obviously was a choreographed thing in a very immediate way. Some of the other things I liked was Thanos was pretty good.
Excellent. Yeah, I was really surprised by
how good. I thought that Brolin did a fucking great job with him.
I thought they sold his motivation really well, even though it just all happened in this movie. I thought all the character interaction. I thought his team sucked.
Yeah, his team was garbage.
Like,
are they actually his kids?
No,
they're like Gamora is his kid.
Yeah, Gamora.
Yeah,
and,
that makes more sense.
Those guys, while some, I found them, they could be interesting because whoever made the movie was like, we've got all our guys, we've got all the heroes everyone loves, we've got to get everyone on board with Thanos. That's all we're doing.
Yeah.
These dudes, they're for comic book fans only.
Yeah. They don't even have names. There was the guy, there was the psychic guy.
There were names mentioned, but honestly can't remember them, apart from the Squidworth, of course.
And everyone's just going to call him Squidward, because that's the Iron Man effect, everyone.
Yep. And I did really like, actually, another standout point for me was how Iron Man and Doctor Strange had like a narcissism clash.
Yeah, that was good.
The friction between them was really interesting. And that's the stuff I'm really excited to see is, we're going to match random characters together, see how they interact with each other.
Mm.
It's like, you know, Spider-Man having really serious fights with the Guardians of the Galaxy people and fighting Thanos and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that worked. And
the Hulk hanging out with Rocket. Rocket deciding to be the captain and going over to have a talk.
When you say
with
the Hulk, you mean Thor?
Thor, yeah, I do. Totally mean the Thor. Yeah, when like Rocket and Thor have that moment where
I thought that was a really good scene.
Yeah,
and he's like, time to be the captain, and he got up and performed emotional labor.
Yeah,
and I thought it was just so fascinating that even Rocket understands that's why Quill is the captain, because Quill is better equipped to do that than him.
Yeah,
and even though they're both have that sort of that macho performativity to them.
The work that was done in their movie arcs carries across into this one.
Yeah, I think you can tell, because if you looked at the credits, there were two or three cards for all of the people who wrote for this movie.
Oh, wow.
And it's because obviously you would have people who did the core script and that kind of thing, but they would have brought people on to consult for the specific characters that they've written to make sure their voices are consistent and that kind of thing.
Didn't even think
and
about
so
that.
And so James Gunn? Which one's the director and which one's the actor? James Gunn. Sean Gunn is his brother who plays the dude.
Thank you, Google.
So, yeah, James Gunn obviously would have come in to consult on the voices of the Guardians of the Galaxy characters and that kind of thing. And that's part of why I think they worked so well. I didn't see Taika on there. Thor's voice slid back a little bit.
It did, yeah. There was a couple of moments where I was like, that feels like old Thor.
There was a lot of old Thor moments.
They really need to get him to do Thor from now on.
Yeah, I really hope he's doing Thor 4, four Thors.
Where the quad Thors go and save the galaxy.
Yeah, that's a joke I stole from the Chainsaw Suit podcast, everyone. But Thor 4, four Thors. Hello, I'm Thor number one. I'm Thor number two. We'll have a fight.
The other Thors don't talk.
They're too busy kissing.
Oh.
They're too busy doing deep kissing all the time.
Did I write this Thor movie?
I spoke to a friend recently who liked Thor Ragnarok, and when I mentioned that one of the things I really loved about it was how gay it was, he was surprised. Yeah, I guess that really did go under the radar for a lot of people. But my God, when the camera is staring at Thor, that is not the cis-het male gaze, I'm telling you that. This is not, hey, look how cool this guy is, don't you want to be him? That is, how much do you want to ride those abs?
Oh, that right there is going to be my personal favorite sound clip.
So yeah, Thor obviously slid back into old Thor a little bit, but there was also some good moments where they were trying to keep a little bit of new Thor in there.
Thor Ragnarok is really good.
But that scene that you were talking about where he and Rocket have that emotional discussion, I think that's cool. And it kind of shows a little bit of growth in Rocket's character, because Rocket would never do that in front of Quill.
Yeah.
No way would he show emotional availability in front of anybody else on his crew. But because the only other person there was Groot, he could. And I think that that's interesting. It kind of shows how you can be trapped by your current social situation, but the lessons you've learned about yourself can be applied in new social situations where you can be a new kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to ask you something about Groot.
Okay.
Did you know...
Yep.
This has been confirmed, so I'm sorry if this fucks you up.
Yep.
But did you know that Groot is not Groot? That Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and this is actually Groot's son, and Groot died at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 1?
Did I know that? No. Do I care? No. If Groot wasn't in any of these movies, would I care? Yes, I would care. Because I'd be happy. I honestly couldn't give two shits. I love Vin Diesel, and I'm glad he gets work saying one line, but my God...
We need to... The character of Groot himself is not that interesting. The interactions other characters have with Groot is interesting.
I just don't like the jokes they make with him, especially in this movie where he's always on a game device and he's being a teenager. I just was like... Yawn.
Mm.
Cool.
Yeah, they didn't do that much with him in this one. Yeah. But in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, he goes from being the emotional steward of the group to being the child that all of them need to parent and protect.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very good change in the dynamic, especially as the themes of that movie are concerned.
Yeah,
so Groot serves a purpose, but I'm not all like, oh man, here's a photo of baby Groot. He said, I am Groot. Oh my God, he's in a Geico ad. How hilarious.
He's in ads?
Yeah, he's in like ads for insurance companies and shit.
Okay, so another thing I didn't like was how the film we watched was framed by merchandise you could buy at the cinema we were at.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So at the start, right before the movie started, and right at the end, right after that last scene where we'd only just watched Nick Fury fade away into dust, did a splash page for Fun Pop figures and caps appear on the
screen. Buy a pile of dust that used to be Nick Fury.
You can
have your own pile of Thanos dust.
Do you want the crushed remains of the Gauntlet of Power, or whatever it's called?
Buy the shit that'll be in a loot box in 2 months, because we couldn't sell all of it.
Yeah, I saw that and I was just like, oh, that's right, I do hate capitalism.
Yeah, before my one, there was an ad for the Avengers station somewhere in Melbourne where you could go and try and lift Thor's hammer.
I'm sure I could. It's not a real hammer. Couldn't even do a nail.
The only reason I would go into that place would be to do a magic trick where I somehow figure out how to detach the hammer from the pedestal and just walk out with it. It's like, King of Asgard, motherfuckers, and then you're just gone. That would be a good magic trick, David Blaine.
I also love how Steve Rogers is almost as godly as Thor, but they like super underplay it. Like when he barely moves the hammer.
Oh, that was such a
good
moment.
Thor has like a heart attack and he's like, don't mention it. Everything's fine. No one noticed but me.
Gosh, you can't lift it.
And when he's holding back Thanos and you're like, okay, now is when everyone else would fail, but because you're Captain America.
Yeah, there's something in you that's just inherently good, and your moral strength is what's able to hold back the entire weight of the six ingots from which reality was shaped.
Yeah, it's like when the whole of the Guardians of the Galaxy held the stone.
Yeah.
And then they did a dance. Well, they did a dance, and then they held the stone.
Good moment.
Ultimately, quite enjoyed the movie. Really glad I saw it. And it's made me excited to see the wrap-up.
Yeah,
and see
I definitely do want to see that. And I can say this. Part of the advantage of eliminating half of the cast was because now they will have a much more focused second half.
And I want to see how Captain Marvel is going to be involved in her movie, and also if she's going to be in the Infinity War Part 2 and what that means and all that stuff.
My guess is that Ant-Man and the Captain Marvel movie are both going to be before Infinity War 1.
Yeah.
Because, and like, the reason why Nick Fury can summon Captain Marvel is because of whatever happens in a Captain Marvel movie beforehand.
Nah, I really hope, I don't think Ant-Man will be, but I really hope the Captain Marvel movie is post.
I think that it sucks to
I just don't want to have that
character come in that context where they don't have the opportunity to be themselves in their own kind of movie. It's like the introduction of Spider-Man being in Civil War, I don't think does that character as much justice as it necessarily deserves.
And
this would be that times about 50.
I just don't...
Like, think about Vision and how little we care about Vision.
You shut your mouth. Some of us love Vision.
Some of us love Paul Bettany. That's very different.
True.
Vision coming in at the end of Age of Ultron. Yep. And then you've got the Vision Wanda thing. Like, okay, I guess we're kind of floating now in Civil War, I guess. That character just never really had a chance to grow because Vision is always in a team-up movie. I hope that Captain Marvel can grow into her own character without this as the backdrop.
What I'm more interested in is it just not being a conventional origin movie.
Yeah.
Because I thought that Black Panther was better off having him introduced in another
movie. That's a very good point.
And that movie was just like, oh, no, we're just all into it. You already know who Black Panther is.
Yeah.
Like, you get this.
We've done cool enough origin movies that we don't need to do them anymore. Spider-Man will not get an origin movie in MCU. It's
totally fine. We didn't need to see Peter Parker get bitten by a radioactive spider again.
And have Uncle Ben get shot by a carjacker again.
I've seen Uncle Ben shot so many times, I see it when I close my eyes. It's just there, Uncle Ben.
Great power, great responsibility. Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben, no.
And they're never going to do it better than the Tobey Maguire ones. Yes. I think they know that.
Yes, and we all know that even Tobey Maguire number 3 was better than that whole second arc of Spider-Man's. Yeah. Tobey Maguire, evil dancing down the street.
That's a good movie. Yeah. The third Spider-Man movie, the third Raimi one is a good movie.
Sandman's a weak villain, though. Anyway, I think we should wrap it up now because otherwise we'll just keep rambling forever. Ultimately, I really liked Infinity War. I'm genuinely surprised by how much I've enjoyed some of these more recent ones. I think they're starting to explore things and go into a little bit more depth with Black Panther especially, and with Thor Ragnarok getting more interesting people to come in and direct, and also, as you said, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I wasn't too much of a fan, like I wasn't super jazzed, but all these films have been interesting.
Yeah, for me, Guardians, Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther are on a whole nother level, and this is not there. This is, I wish I could remember who said this, but I read a quip on Twitter that this is not the best Marvel movie, but is the most Marvel movie.
Yeah.
It is very on par with Civil War and Age of Ultron and that kind of thing.
I personally liked it better than, maybe not Civil War, but I liked it better than the other Avengers movie.
Yeah, I would say I agree with that.
Even Avengers 1, it doesn't have the pace that this movie does.
Avengers 1 only beats this movie out emotionally for me because it was so fascinating to see that happen. But we've since had 8 years or whatever of this working. This is the better film. It is better from a script structure perspective, a character perspective. Basically, every way a movie can be better, it is better than both other Avengers movies. It is very, very good. I'm glad I've seen it, and I am excited to see the next one.
Yes. Awesome.
Well, I suppose that does it for another Fast Cast. Our next game is honestly one of the best games I probably ever played, and that is The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, this game was just... wow.
Part of what's so very cruel about this, though, is that for a number of reasons, I can't actually be there to record this episode, yes, which kills me because I've been looking forward to recording it ever since I played it.
But it's all right, everyone. I got David's list of notes. It was only 1,000 pages long. I made sure to read it and reread it.
Hey, look, I want to make this clear. Those are suggestions. Oh, okay.
Of course. Yes, yes.
This is just me being supportive for you and how you record the episode.
Yeah, and I'm very glad that you highlighted certain suggestions in red text with multiple underlines and explanation points. It was very suggestive.
There was a reading list attached as well, as far as like game theory and critical theory is concerned.
And several tests as well.
Yeah, this is about me helping you be the best host that you can be. I'm not pushing.
The other interesting thing about this episode is that we recorded it with a guest. So a friend of mine, James Dominguez, came in to take David's place and record the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one rambly chat.
So look forward to that one. I know I am, because I don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
But that is it for another Fast Cast. As always, I have been David.
I have been John.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope to see you next time for Breath of the Wild.